join spiritual feminist and empowerment coach, Joni Advent Maher, for Trust Your Sacred Feminine Flow. Listen in for intimate conversations about money, transformation, and feminine sovereignty. And now, your host, Joni Advent Maher.
Welcome to Trust Your Sacred Feminine Flow. I'm your host, Joni Advent Maher, empowered living coach and spiritual feminist. And I am delighted today to have a special guest for our one-year anniversary, Christine Arilo. Welcome, Christine.
Well, hello, everyone. And Joni, thank you so much for having me here. I was 1 year anniversary. This is a momentous circle. It's like, that's what I love about cycles. We're ending and we're starting. And I'm super excited to be here with you all today. I'm sitting in my backyard in Valley of the Moon. And I was just telling Joni that I have hummingbirds flying around right now. And the sun is beginning to set. So I'm looking forward to being with you all.
Thank you. Let me tell everyone a little bit more about you. So Christine is a transformational teacher extraordinaire. She's a woman's leadership advisor and mentor, an internationally recognized speaker, and three-time best-selling author. After she earned her MBA and climbed the corporate ladder for a decade, she chose to devote her life to helping people transform and architect lives that were both successful and sustainable, in which their hearts and their souls could thrive. She's known today as a kind of modern-day mystic, and her transformational programs, workshops, retreats, and talks are based on the feminine power and leadership, yogic techniques, and earth-based wisdom, and they have transformed the lives of 35,000 women on 6 continents. Woo! That's quite an accomplishment. Lots of accomplishments.
Well, it feels, it's always interesting having in listening to someone speaking about the words that I did write those words, but to try and tell one story about the work I do and the presence I am and really how I live. And so as you're saying that, Joni, and everyone, as I'm listening to that, I am both, all of those things are true, and it's also my practice and how I live. There is no, I'm not done. I'm not complete. I'm not fully baked. It's this, like hearing you talking, those are some of the things that are my North Stars for my own life that help me stay true to who I am and stay true to the way I choose to live while I'm on this planet.
Yes. And I, as I'm sitting here with you, I'm thinking, one of the ideas that I'm working with these days is really that kind of coming into our fullness or our potency as women. And you are someone who I see as really transmitting and radiating your potency. And what I mean by that is that deeper spiritual essence, that soul being. And I think it is your practice. So I would love to hear about your journey with that. Has this always been the case for you?
Well, if you're all willing to go on a little time trip back with me, we'll get in the little time machine, go back here. I think it's always one of the things that I think is great to ask people. I'll always say, like, what was your self-love catalyst moment, or what was your spiritual catalyst moment that had that light bulb of illumination go off that made you realize that the way that you thought things were aren't really how things are at all. And it's one of those things whenever I'm working with people at a workshop or at a retreat, and they'll be like, well, I guess I gotta go back to reality now. I'm like, whoa, 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 back up, back up. I'm like, there are many levels of reality, you know, and it's just what we can see, right? What we can see that defines what we see reality as. Hmm. And one of the benefits of my spiritual journey has been the ability to see many different realities at one time, but also to be able to look back at what one might call my past and say, and see the reality that was true then. And so I'll tell you a little story kind of about how I realized that there was more than just the reality that I was in and the reality I was at the time, which was about the age of 29, 30, when I was hanging on to the reality I did not want to shift. I will do whatever I have to, and I don't know for about the rest of you, but I am like, I'm a good doer. I'm an amazing achiever. I like to get stuff done. If I have a vision for something, I will drive to it. And this was way before I ever even knew the feminine was anything other than a gender. And so my spiritual catalyst moment came on the heels of a broken engagement, which I was not the one doing the breaking of. Mm-hmm. And it was a 15-year relationship through high school and college that I tried to make work over and over and over again because I was desperately trying to avoid all the stuff that was going on the inside of me. And to this day, I have not spoken to the person who I was formerly engaged with in many, many years, but I sent him little love grams all the time saying, thank you for pulling the Band-Aid off. Thank you for pulling the ripcord, because what happened to me, and for any of you, if you've been through, a breakup, and this is the interesting thing about our spiritual journey, and we'll probably get into this more, I think, too later, is that there's just these different catalysts that show up in our lives. Sometimes it's relationship. It's either relationship, money, health, or home, yes, or work. Those are kind of like the five. And if you can actually embrace the fact that when those things show up in your life, that they're really catalysts and opportunities for the elevation of your life, for the elevation of your soul, for the liberation, really. Yes. So when I look back at that time, well, I am so grateful, although at the time it felt like someone had basically yanked my internal scaffolding and it just had crumbled like toothpicks, just like I had built a house of cards that had just fallen. And it did, because that was my ego, just crumbling into a million different pieces. And I remember the first night that I spent on my own after, the first couple of weeks of just being in shock, and I was living with a friend, and she wasn't home because she was engaged. And I was living there by myself, and I had that hole in my heart that I had always mistook for him missing, whenever you go through a breakup and that heart feels so, so empty. And then I was just laying there in bed, and this little voice spoke to me. And it was a little voice, it's the voice of wisdom. It's the voice of the divine, who had been trying to call me up on the phone for a long time, but I kept hanging up on her because I'm like, I don't want whatever you have to do, whatever you're selling, I don't want that. But I was so broken open, at this point my defenses were down. So I started listening, and then the voice says to me, it says, Christine, you almost married this guy, it was, whatever, da, da, da. But that pain you're feeling in your heart, that's not him missing. That's you missing. And I was like, what? Like, I got my attention. I was like, what? When that voice speaks to you or you feel something, you just know. And so it got my attention, kept talking, and it said, here's the thing. You have a lot of self-esteem, confidence. You go for what you want. You're successful at work. You have, good friends. You have self-esteem, but you don't love yourself. And I was like, what? But I knew. I'm like, I don't even know what that means, but you're right. Okay, I'm listening. And then the third thing they said was, regardless that you almost married the wrong guy, that would have been bad enough. But was even worse, you all, and this is just like, this is what really got me, is that you almost gave up the life your heart and soul really desired.
Wow.
And you almost settled because getting his love and keeping his love was more important than loving yourself. And it was like in that moment, you all, I saw my whole life flash before me. Because if I had stayed, I was living in Chicago at the time. I was getting my MBA at Kellogg, and I could, and I, if I had, and he never wanted to leave the state of Illinois. I wanted to get as far away from Illinois and go live in, you know, live in California on the coast, work in fashion. And I would not have made those choices because I would have stayed in that relationship. And I just saw my whole life, Joni, went like those, and I saw me getting this job, probably selling cheese or tartar sauce. And I kid you not, no, nothing wrong with the Midwest. I love the Midwest, but I either would have become a consultant who worked 80 hours a week and then, you know, gained 50 pounds, got divorced at the age of 50, or I would have sold tartar sauce, which I don't even know it's real tartar sauce at Kraft, because that's what you know Chicago MBAs do. And I would have given up my dream of working in fashion and living in California, and I wouldn't be talking with you all today. And so that night I made a promise to myself that I've kept ever since, that had become the foundational vow of self-love and has really been the foundation of my teachings, which is this, and if you have a pen, I invite you to write this down, is I will never settle for less than my heart and soul desire. I will never settle for less than my heart and soul desires, which meant from that point on, I had to figure out or be able to listen to what my heart and soul desired, because as it turned out, I didn't really know what my heart and soul desired. I only knew what my ego desired, not my heart and soul.
Wow. That is worth underscoring.
I got calling it a pink highlighter. Pink highlighter, that one.
Wow.
Well, and if you just think about that promise, everyone, just think about it for a moment, because it's not like I made that promise, you know, however long ago that was, many, many years ago, and then forgot about it and put it in a drawer somewhere. That promise and why it is the foundational vow of self-love, and since we are here also talking about the feminine, let me just say, you cannot have feminine power without self-love, period. It's what I've spent the last 10 years of my life dedicated to studying and understanding and making practical, and why I founded the Path of Self-Love School, and why I've spent so much life force focusing on self-love as well as on feminine leadership. And if you got to think about that promise for a second for yourself, because it's not something you just take a promise and then forget about it. It becomes this North Star for your life. So by that, what I mean is, you know, the feminine heart's very intelligent. And we always know when things aren't in alignment and when things aren't in harmony, or we always know when we're being called to step out of our comfort zone and step, you know, out of conventional wisdom to follow our deeper guidance. And it's scary. And of course, you know, there's the moments we want to pull the Linus blanket over our head and be like, I don't wanna. But we all know, right? That's no bueno. Then you get the Mack truck wake up call, you know, like I did. And so what I've done with that vow is I've kept it with me. And at the times in my life when I have felt depressed, or I felt crabby, or I felt out of sorts, or I've felt like no matter how much I did, there was never enough, or there wasn't harmony and grace, and that, you know, or I wasn't feeling in alignment or happy, I would stop and pause and really ask this question. I'm like, where am I out of alignment? Where is my life out of alignment with what my heart and soul desires? And I have gotten the most profound inner wisdom from that. And then that, because of that commitment and because my practice is to communicate with my heart and soul. So I don't just ask that question when I'm in times of stress or stretch or unhappiness or things feel out of alignment. I ask it at the beginning of every year. I mean, that's part of my visioning process. What does my heart and soul desire? And I have a ritual, a process I do around that. I'm doing that right now. I do it at Beltane every year. I do it, you know, at the beginnings of the moons. Like, there's a way that I'm constantly at deeper levels of conversation with my heart and soul. And then part of our job, everyone, part of your job for yourself and for your work and your family is to know yourself, to know your heart so well, to know your soul so well that you know when you're out of alignment, and you know and how to get back in, And you're also constantly in conversation with yourself around that, because right now the way that the world is working, it's so fast, it's so rapid. It's like if we were getting instructions from the divine, she's handing them out, you know, kind of like at a daily and a weekly basis. So you want to be, you know, in constant contact with that part of you. It's really, I don't even know how to live your greatest life and give your sacred work and navigate this world without that communion between your heart and your soul and yourself.
Right. So that is, it sounds like that is one of your key practices, is that staying in tune, getting in communion with your heart and your soul.
Yes. And really noticing what are your specific signs that you're out of alignment. So it's both exactly, yes. I love the words that you use, Joni. There's attunement, right? So it's like, that's part of why I, about 5 years ago, so I'll give you an example. It was about 2012, and I was writing my second book, Madly in Love with Me, and I was staying here in Valley of the Moon where I live. I wasn't living here yet, and I was working a lot because I love my work. My work is amazing, but I was working a lot. I would look back at myself and I would say, I was working too much. I was working a lot. I was writing a book. I was running 3 programs. I had 2 businesses, and on paper, you know, there was a whole bunch of money being made on paper, but yet there never was enough money. There was always stress around money. So even though my businesses combined were grossing, well, you know, over $500,000, I was, you know, struggling to kind of pay my mortgage and my property taxes and like just make all of that work. You know, part of it, A, is living in California, but like B, is just, I believe that, you know, I believe there's something out of alignment, because if money is energy, which I believe it is, I believe that money is a catalyst. And this is my relationship to money, is that when something's not working with my money, it makes me, instead of like, not, and I'm not 100% at this, you all, I am human. So I have my moments and I've had my moments and I'm like, really, spirit, can we have something other than money be, you know, the catalyst? But I'm like, but I don't want relationship. I've had that one before, and I don't want health, so don't give me that one. And, you know, and I'm like, can we just have none of the catalysts? Because I really don't want any of them. So sometimes when money shows up, I'm like, okay, I could deal with this one. This is like a lot easier to deal with than relationship catalysts and health catalysts. So I'll, if I have to pick one, I will choose this one. And so in 2012, or whenever that was, when I was running Madly in Love with Me, and it was like, no matter how much I did, no matter how much work I did, I couldn't work anymore. And there just wasn't enough money. And so I had what I call the superwoman sob moment. And I don't know, Joni, if you've ever had one of these any of you have had one of these. Do you know like that moment where you just, the pressure builds up so much that you just find yourself in tears?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
So that has a name. It's called the Superwoman Sob Moment. So good. I'm not the only one. I'm glad to hear that. Everyone else, nod your head, right? In fact, I think we must have started our podcast right at the same time when I started Feminine Power Time, my podcast. That was one of the first podcasts I did, because I was like, we have to talk about this superwoman sob situation. Because it's like, we're all having it, you know, and once I talk about it, women are like, oh my God, that's happened to me. And, and so, you know, so here I was, for me, I was in wine country, beautiful, working out of my friend's home while she was traveling. And I was sitting on this Chase lounge in her backyard, and the tears just started to flow. And that's when I knew I was out of alignment. You know, it was my spiritual mentor, who I've worked with now for over 10 years, because she's the person who holds space for me, because we all need people to hold space for me. One of the things she taught me is, you know, she said, Christine, anger, frustration, you know, just those tears, they're not bad. It's just, it's a sign that you've stepped out of your heart temple. And I was like, I really like that, because I get angry and frustrated a lot. And underneath the anger and frustration is always the sadness. Yes. And some people's egos, it's easier for you to get sad and depressed or blame yourself, and then you get angry. You know, we all end up in, you know, we kind of have different portals, but those tears come because it's like a, like it's like a keg of beer who's been pressurized, and then you just tap it, and then whoosh, the tears come.
Yes.
And so my practice when that happens is to get really quiet and to use my feminine superpower of intuition and say, okay, what's out of alignment? And because I talk to my inner wisdom and I open that channel every day in my practices in the morning, the channel's really open. And so the voice, I'm auditory. Mm-hmm. So there's six different kinds of channels, main channels. Mine mainly is auditory. And so it just says, your debt is crushing you. So I had a big ass California mortgage and I had a big whopping property bill. And I also had consumer debt that we use to fund our business. Because here's the thing about becoming an entrepreneur that most people don't tell you. You have to fund your business. So either you fund it by money you've saved or by something you sell, or you're independently wealthy, or you get investors, or you put it on credit cards. Like that's how it goes.
Yes.
And we had not refinanced it or anything, even though I had, asked Noah, my partner, for a year to refinance it. He was having his own resistance around it. And so I came home to Noah, and I knew when it said that the debt was choking you, I knew that that was right. Mm-hmm. And it partly it was also because here I was writing. I wasn't even at home writing. I was at someone else's house. I was always leaving my house. Because I didn't really want to live in Oakland, although it was a cute little house in the redwood trees. It was also near a freeway, so there was a lot of energetic psychic energy flying around, and so I was always leaving my house. And I have a home is also one of my main catalysts that shows up a lot. And so what was true is that the debt was really not in the inability to kind of make things work, even though there was all the numbers were there, was also partly tied to I didn't feel at home in my own home. I didn't really want to be there. So I go home and I say to Noah, we got to sell the house. We got to restructure our debt. And he's like, now, mind you all, we had thought about selling our house a couple years before that, but then the market crashed. And so the market had crashed again. I know this is 2012. So we basically, all real estate was underwater in California. So what this meant was that I was going to have to short sell my house. Now, for any of you that don't know what that means, I'm from the Midwest. Short sell means you have to stop paying your mortgage until the bank will talk to you. Stupidest, these systems are so crazy. So that they'll talk to you and work out a deal with you to be able to, versus just be able to say, I'm going to sell the house, right? And can we work out a deal where it's no longer worth this? It's worth this now. Since this is all funny money anyway, what do you all say? So I'm from the Midwest. I have an 800 credit score. I've never paid a bill late in my entire life. When I worked in corporate America, I maxed out my 401ks. I was in control.
You did it all right.
I did it all right. I did it all right. Yeah, my heart and soul was telling me something, different.
Yes.
And so the voice, so I was like, okay, so that's what I have to do. And I'll be honest, there was fear there. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm going to totally wreck my credit score. And, what will happen? And how will I ever buy a car again? And how will I ever, and people will, oh, what do you mean? That means I'm a failure, oh my God, all of that stuff coming up. And thankfully I have my practice, my yoga practice and my spiritual practice and a lot of really good mentors around me. And I got really clear. The voice, my inner wisdom spoke to me. She said, look, what's more important to you, your happiness or your credit score? And it was in that moment I knew that this was part of my catalyst that was going to be able to serve other people. And it was also, I could use it to elevate my relationship with Noah, and I could use it to free myself from my own fear of being hooked into the system. Because I was hooked in, right? I was hooked into the system of my, of success and of where my value comes from. And Spirit's like, really? Is that what you're going to value yourself on based on what kind of house you own or what your credit score is? And I was like, damn, this life, I really had to pick self-love to teach me. But anyway, the story does go. So I got that. So that's the piece of part that I'd love to just offer to you all is to start to really see these things that are appearing as catalysts. right? So once I got that it was a catalyst, I was no longer a victim to it. I was in relationship to it. And so we moved through the process. We did put our house on the market, and I used that as a catalyst to then live a dream, which is to live and work from anywhere in the world. So Noah and I turned in our car, put our stuff into storage, and we traveled for 3 years. We lived all over the world. And it had been a dream. Did you not know that?
I didn't know it was for 3 years. I didn't realize it was that long. I met you, I think, when you were about to start that for year one. So
it was. Well, we did. Yeah, we were gone for 3 years or on the road, and we lived 8 months in L.A. So that was kind of our last stint before coming back when I was getting my yoga training. But I used it as a catalyst to then go on the road and teach. And I got to speak at all these spiritual centers and teach and meet people. And and here's what was so crazy, you all. This is, and then, you know, we had to use, basically I used my rent, my mortgage money to pay for me to live all over the world.
Wow.
Great. I Airbnb'd all over the place. And so, but what was amazing is that we would always come back to one country to like winter or whatever. And there were several times where my rent was much more than my mortgage was. And I had no problem money-wise where there being enough money.
Wow.
Because I was in the right place at the right time. We rented a beautiful villa, a four-bedroom villa in wine country where I did some retreats at. We rented a loft on the beach in Los Angeles that was at least 1.5 times my mortgage. And there was enough because I was in alignment.
Yes. That it brings me back to a comment you made prior to the start of our interview here, when you were talking about having to operate in the linear or kind of in the world, but not really being, this is my phrasing, of the world. So, you know, using a different means to move through life than the conventional reality or the conventional wisdom.
Yep. You want me to talk about that?
Yes, I'm inviting you to talk about that.
Oh, yes, we were just talking about that before, and it's let's see if I unpack this, probably the best way to go in, is, you know, what, I remember being in a Kundalini yoga, so I teach Kundalini yoga as part of the embodiment of spirit. I went to LA and studied Kundalini yoga specifically because it's a technology that allows us to just open up our internal channels and break through blocks so quickly. And so I incorporated it into a lot of my work, and I was in one of the trainings, and one of the men that was doing the training, he said, you know, you don't want to be normal. He's like, normal in this world is unhealthy. And I was like, that's right. Yogic wisdom. Absolutely. You know, it's like, you know, he's not the first, that's the way he said it. But, you know, I think it's Jesus is ascribed to saying, be in the world, but not of the world. Be in the world, but not of the world. And, you know, if you just got to look around, and I like to call it the mainstream, so main-stream world. The flow of the mainstream is choppy, is swirly, is rapid, is full of all kinds of beer cans and old food cans and toxins, and, you know, it's just, it's, you know, it's like a bad frat party. I mean, that's what the mainstream, you know, is like these days. And so, you know, we're not here to be aesthetic priests or priestesses living in a mountain cabin somewhere where we'd never interact with humanity. That's not why we're here. I mean, there are people that are obviously here for that, but the majority of us aren't, not this lifetime anyway. We really are here to be bridges between the mystical and the mundane, between the spiritual and the material. And we're also here to have our own elevation. You know, one of the things I see over and over and over again that sometimes don't just want to stand up on a roof and scream this. So I won't scream this to all of you, but I'll share it with you, and hopefully you can take this into your lives. So there's so much attention, even in the spiritual world or the activism world or the feminist world, around going out there and fighting. You know, fighting the man, fighting the establishment, making change out in the outside. And while that's an important part of the equation, it's not really where the most powerful work gets done. There's a lot of noise. I mean, Facebook and Twitter survive based on this. There's also a lot of distraction, and there's a lot of ways you can waste your energy running around in that crazy frat party, even trying to do good. Even trying to do good.
Yes.
And so the more potent work and the more potent way to approach that, so that you can integrate with and interact with the mainstream world in a way in which you're here to do your part to elevate consciousness, to return wisdom and love to these power-based systems that have caused the distortion and the destruction of many, is to start on the inside. And I mean that very specifically, not theoretically or pedantically or flippantly. And so I'll just break that down into two ways for you to begin to think about it. One is the alchemy that happens in your own consciousness. And by that, what I mean is, you can look, turn on the television. I was just at the grocery store with Noah getting our lunch, and there was a Mad Magazine, you know, on the thing with Donald Trump and Alfred E. Newman. And then there was, you know, over here was Brad Pitt, who apparently on Star Magazine isn't eating. And, you know, there's always like, you know, I don't know. There's all kinds of craziness going on. You can see, you know, things that make you angry. You can want to blame. You could want to make people wrong. You know, it's like so easy to see the injustice and the ludicrousy and the fight and all of it on the outside. The spiritual teachers have taught this forever, and we haven't gotten it yet, is that the we can't control that. We have no control over that. We can spend a lot of energy and life force trying to change that, but the more potent work starts if we turn on the inside, and if you're seeing something on the outside that doesn't work for you in your relationships, with your parents, with your family, with your kids, with your beloved, with yourself, with your situation, with your money, with your home, is to stop and pause and look on the inside and say, what's here, going back to the heart and soul, that I have the power to alchemize, that I have the power to, and when I say alchemy, alchemy means to elevate the frequency of something. Is one definition, it means many things, but to elevate the frequency of something. So in our modern lives, we're not walking around turning lead into gold per se, but we are, what the way we can alchemize our own heart and use alchemy in our own heart is to transform those shadows of fear and shame and anger and blame that have eroded and eaten at the human spirit. And I would argue is if we have any leaders and anywhere in the world, this is not just about America, but they're all over the world that are in places of power where they abuse their power. It starts from those shadows of blame and shame and anger and fear and not feeling loved.
Yes.
Right? And I always feel like, oh man, like I don't know, whenever I ask what I'm supposed to talk about to the divine, it's like always go back in. I'm like, no, they want to hear about raising the, you know, the go out and march and go out and fight and, you know, and I love the marches. I love the, you know, speak your truth. And if you don't do this piece, nothing is going to really, the change won't stick. It hasn't stuck for thousands of years because we're not doing this part to the level that we need to do it. Yes. And it's not the sexiest and it's not the most glamorous and it's not going to get you on CNN, but it will, in my experience, it's the deepest work I do. It's why I train people to teach self-love. It's why I live this way, because I know from my own experience that it is the inside, and I can do something about that in a way I can't do it on the outside. I'll give you one little instance. Every year, at the beginning of the year in January, I teach something called Feminine Superpower Year, which is a group of women around the world who band together to say, okay, we're gonna live, lead, and succeed differently. And so we, using the feminine and the moon cycles and all of this stuff, we vision our lives and we change our lives and we shift our lives and all these, and we show up differently. And so in February every year, we focus on the feminine superpower of compassion. And as part of compassion, we choose one toxic habit, one toxic energy that we carry in our own hearts, that we use in our relationships, that doesn't create love, but instead creates those other things. And we choose to transform it over the course of the year. So it was last year or the year before, I think 2 years ago, I chose to alchemize blame. My ego used to love to blame. This year we're releasing lashing out. She gets really angry and she wants to find someone's head to cut off. Usually my partner, who's the sweetest, most nurturing man in the world. So 2 years ago, So 2 years ago it was blame, and I was going through a business partnership divorce, and in which we loved to blame each other, and so it was the perfect ground for me to transmute the blame, you know, and I was aware of it. So this is that piece again, going back to the catalyst of understand why things are showing up in your life. And I was like, all right, I'm going to use this business divorce as a way to catalyze this blame. And I'm going to focus on it, and I'm going to get my practice. And I did, you know, many different things to do that. And it really worked. You know, I mean, I'm not saying I don't have any in there, but it's like if I was a love cocktail, I just amped up 10% more love.
Wow.
You know, it's like, and so that's I'm very much about making the mystical and esoteric practical so that you can actually work with it. But we have to know that we are, this is how we're alchemists in our own, you know, in our own lives.
Yes. I love that. And I will say that there is a lot of strength of spirit and character just to be diligent and take that on. And it requires humility and vulnerability and things that most people aren't flocking to. So.
Right, Joni?
So
I know, I always say, I'm like, God, you know, why couldn't I just, like, go teach people how to lose 10 pounds, make 7 figures, call in the one? I'm like, people throw money at those people, you know, and, you know, like, just, and I'm over here, I'm like, love yourself, you know? Divine feminine, live the feminine, wisdom, and it's, you know, I've had my own ego challenges with that, and I remember sitting with my spiritual mental Ariel, this was years ago, right before my second book came out, and I went to sit with her, and I said, I want to release this book from a place of grace and love without ego. My first book got released with ego. I did not want that experience ended in a superwoman sob. I did not want that experience again. So I proactively went to seek out, you know, spiritual guidance, and she looked at me. And this is, you know, for any of you who have spiritual mentors, you'll know this. And this is, people say this about me. They're like, Christine's like, you can see into my soul. I'm like, what? I don't know. I'm just asking a question. But Ariel, my spiritual mentor, has this effect on me. So I go to her, I ask her this question to help me get to truth, right? This is why we have mentors. This is why we sit in circle with other women, to help us make sure we're in alignment. Because it's easy in the mainstream to get distorted. And so I ask her the question. I tell her, you know, I really want to release this book from a place of total alignment, total service to the divine. And within 3 seconds, she's like, well, I only have one question for you. And she calls me Arilo. And I say, well, what's that? She's like, do you need to be famous? And I'm like, well, let me close my eyes and check in on that. So I close my eyes, you know, to dial in the wisdom. And I get an answer, like, within 3 seconds. But I don't like the answer. So wait, give me a couple more minutes. Let me just feel in here. And I'm just like, oh, man. And I'm like... The answer, yes, yes, I still need to be famous. I need to be seen. I need to be recognized. And she just looked at me and I'm like, all right, I know what to do now. And I, but it was like that ability to see that pattern in me, because this is what we, this is what we don't see. And this is, we can't, it's hard. How do you see that inside of yourself? Right. You can, and this is the piece, the other, the piece, and why I'm so, I'm so, so committed to helping women get onto a rhythm that is not the mainstream and to get into this more natural rhythm. This is why I teach Moonifesting and I teach the feminine superpower year, and we live by the moon cycles. And like we pause at the equinox. Why every year I do a mid-year solstice, you know, pausing, like there's these four key points, the winter solstice, summer solstice, equinoxes. Those you have to pause and reflect and see where you are and be able to really feel into your heart and soul before you make choices about where you're going to put your life force and your resources at. Or if you're going into a major, you know, time, like I was going into releasing this book, get in alignment before you go out there, because it's so easy, right, to get distorted by looking, you know, and this is, you know, what we just, you know, the media, Facebook, we see, I should be doing that. That's, you know, it's like we're so pulled off of our center. And then we get overwhelmed. We get stretched. This is part of the reason you're overwhelmed and you feel stretched, because you get confused about what your part is to do.
Yes.
And really to stay aligned with that. And the only way I know how to do that is to actually live in connection to the natural rhythms of the way the earth works. And the way that the earth works is the way the cosmos works, is the way our human bodies are meant to work. And this is from a feminine wisdom, and this is Celtic wisdom, this is indigenous wisdom. I mean, this is the way it works on the planet. And we've chopped up the calendar into 365 days, 12 months a year, when there's 13 cycles in the year. So we literally cut a month, a cycle out. We have less cycles, but there's all these reasons why the time system we work on doesn't support us to know what's in alignment and what's out of alignment. And we don't have these structures of sisterhood and spiritual mentorship and whatever to be able to sit and like, let me really tune in. Because we, at one level, and this is going to be hard for all of us to admit, but I think it's important for us to admit, at a cultural level, we've been taught not to value the feminine.
Yes.
And the feminine is slowing down. The feminine is pausing. The feminine is intuition. Feminine, in an elemental perspective, is water. Everyone take a breath.
Yes.
So this is the piece with the feminine. This is the second piece of the first piece I was telling you, is if we don't value her, we don't value it in how we live, it cannot sustain its rising. It won't. So you can look back over history, many movements of feminist energy, consciousness rising, and it puddles, it piddles out. And it, why doesn't it, what is it that doesn't maintain it? Because we're not honoring it inside of ourselves.
Right.
We will never have gender equity until we have inner gender equality.
Yes.
We will never have outside gender equality if we do not honor both the masculine and feminine within ourselves.
I am right there with you. That is what I want to shout from the rooftops. So thank
you. Well, go right ahead. We all, and then, I mean, absolutely. And that's that. And so I share that, you all, just to wake us up, you know, like we don't get to skip the inner pieces and just as simple as living with the moon cycles and the equinoxes. And I've been growing my work and my living my business, my life this way, and really redesigning my life for now almost 10 years. And I just know without a doubt, it is what has, it's why things have grown the way that they have. And it's why I'm happier and more peaceful.
Yes.
On the inside. And, you know, everything isn't perfect. Are there still things I want? Yes, of course, there's still things I desire. But I have a for a person who is a card-carrying member in the Impatience Club, I have really I've really learned, and it's a practice, like going back to where we started. I live this way. I'll never be done. There's Yogi Bhajan, who's the man who brought Kundalini Yoga to the West. He was a master of Kundalini Yoga at the age of 16. He came here when he was in his 40s and in the late 60s and taught people all over the world. And when he was in his 70s, one student said, well, Yogi, why do you still practice? He's like, you've been a master for over 50 years. And Yogi B looked at him and said, to remain a master. That's why I practice.
Yes.
So this is why I practice self-love. This is why I practice living in tune with the rhythms of the earth so I can really live the feminine.
Yes. So that feels like a journey through the facets of answering the question that we started with at the very, very beginning. Like this, yes, all of this is the answer to that question. And I love and appreciate your sharing, you know, in the depth and the generosity that you have. And I want to shift and ask, as I do all my guests, the idea of the sacred feminine and that sense of flow that can come. Do you have a story of trusting your sacred feminine flow you would like to share with us?
Well, I think going back to the story that I shared about not being, you know, with my book and, you know, selling the house and going on the road and, you know, living as a spiritual gypsy was a fascinating experience of trust and surrender. And when you say sacred feminine flow, at the root of the root, those are two of the feminine superpowers that are there, trust and surrender. And so living as a spiritual gypsy where I didn't know where I was going to live, you know, I didn't have some master plan. I didn't have a gazillion dollars. I didn't have a 7-point itinerary, you know. I really had to trust and feel into the timing and the spaciousness and allow things to unfold in front of me and be so attuned to my intuition and my wisdom channels to know when to act and to know when to not act and to know when to listen. I mean, the feminine isn't just sitting around under a bodhi tree, you know, listening. I mean, you got to know when to act. There's both, you know, being and doing. And so that process for 3 years, of making those housing choices. I mean, I can remember when we're considering where to live. We're considering where to live after being on the road for 2 years, and we were thinking about going to LA. And Noah and I met there in May, actually right around this time, about 3 years ago. And we got there, and he was doing a training there, and he was thinking about going to grad school there. And I was kind of freaking out because home is one of my catalysts. And so I was like, where am I going to live? Where am I going to live? You know, and I was having a little bit of a freak out moment. And so sometimes when I do that, I like start working, you know, which is the last thing I should do. And so Noah's like, Christine, just get in the car and go drive and go towards the ocean. I'm like, okay, we're somewhere like near Culver City. And so I got in the car and I just let the car guide me. And I ended up in Santa Monica, kind of near Venice, at this, like, I don't know, this like fish place that sold fish to eat at. And I go there and I eat, and I'm just being open. I'm like, okay, just show me where I'm supposed to go. And so I finish, and I start walking around, and I end up walking down the street that goes towards the ocean. And I just think to myself, oh, I could really live here. I could live here. Well, fast forward 5 months, we decide to move to Los Angeles. We don't know where we're going to live. We have no house there. My friend Christine is going on book tour, so we sublet her place while she's on book tour. And the place that we ended up finding and living at was one block away from the street that I had walked down on that day.
Wow.
So if I hadn't gotten away from the computer, where there were no answers inside of, and trusted myself to just drive and then went to the fish place and then just listened to my intuition and just walked, you know, and then that whole process, and then to realize that when we found the place, I'm like, this is one block from where I was in May.
Yes, that's crazy and not crazy. Like, of course.
Of course. And then I would be, you know, here with you all, like, you know, whenever you're listening to this, but I was like, this is like, literally, it's like the same exact time that was happening.
I love that. I love that. All right. So we have one more question and then we need to wrap it up. This is one of my favorites, but from where you stand today and all this wisdom that you carry, what would you tell your younger self?
Chill out. I would tell my younger self to chill out. I'd tell her to chill out. She, remember when I was 20, my first job out of college, I worked for the Weather Channel in their sales department in Chicago. And I was a sales assistant. And one of the guys that worked there, within a month, and he's like, has anyone ever told you that you're kind of impatient? And I had, like, at this point in my life, I was 20. I just thought I was like, again, my reality. I just thought everybody was this way. And I can remember being a sales assistant and, you know, being there for 4 months and wondering why I was not already, you know, I already had my boss's job. So I've always kind of been ahead of myself. You know, it's something I'm very aware of now. And it's slightly, sometimes as a visionary, there's the benefits to that.
Yes.
But I can put a lot of pressure on myself too. I mean, I think about the poor college professor who gave me an A- and who I like harassed until he gave me an A. And so I think that I don't know if it's chill out. I would have listened to chill out, but I think that, and I think that I think I really would have really loved for someone to talk to me about self-love and really what that is and talk to me about my heart.
Yes.
It's one of the reasons why I founded the Path of Self-Love School, which we teach teachers all over the world, and we do programs with kids and with adults. But we're teaching moms, for example, how to teach their kids about their hearts, not at a physical level, but at an emotional and spiritual level, so that when they get what I call a love crack, so say the kid goes to school and he gets bullied, or, you know, we all have our stories, we can't protect our kids to not have the love crack happen. But we can make it so that it doesn't become the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
We can teach our kids, right, how to fill in those cracks. It goes back to alchemy, how to fill in those cracks with love. And as we're teaching this to mothers, and they're teaching it to their kids, it's working. And we're also teaching adults how to trust themselves. So all of the stuff with feminine wisdom, how to really tune into your wisdom, how to know the difference between the voice of fear, which I like to call your inner mean girl, or the voice of your wisdom. But imagine as a 14-year-old or a 12-year-old, no one taught me about those two different voices.
Yes.
Or those two different forces, right? And so the force inside of me, my wisdom, said to me 6 months into dating my ex-person, this is not the guy for you.
Wow.
Right? But my father had died 6 months before that, and, I was afraid of, I was afraid. I had a big old blood cry called the fear of abandonment. But had I known that voice existed, that what that was, and I had a lot of self-esteem, but there was a part of me that didn't trust myself. And I also had these love wounds, these love cracks inside. And so, being able to teach girls and boys how to trust that and how to discern between those voices, but we can't teach them if we can't live that. And so I think for me, having someone to be able to teach me how to fill my love cracks and to really work with my heart on all of those levels, and then how to discern between those different forces within, so that I really could make the choices that were best for me. And ultimately, I got there anyway, but it would have been a lot nicer for it to be 6 months instead of 14, 15 years. And so that would be my answer to that.
Beautiful. Well, as we bring this to a close, I do want to go back and underscore that you do have a fantastic podcast of your own called Feminine Power Time, and our listeners can find you there on, I'm assuming, iTunes, and I know on Stitcher because that's where I listen to it.
iTunes, Stitcher, and you can also go to feminine power podcast.com, and you'll find it there too.
Wonderful.
On my website.
And you have a blog on Huffington Post? I didn't know that.
I do, on Huffington Post and Thrive, which is Ariana Huffington's newest adventure. So I blog for both of them.
And so they just find that through Huffington Post?
Huffington Post or Thrive. Yes, you can go to the Thrive sites. And a lot of those come through my are excerpts from Feminine Power Time, the podcast, too. So it's the best way to check that out.
Yes, and your whole range of things can be found on your site, which is your name, ChristineArylo.com. Yes?
Yes, A-R-Y-L-O. That's how you spell it, A-R-Y-L-O. And you can also, if you're interested in specifically in self-love, we have a separate website for our school, which is pathsofselflove.org.
Wonderful. Well, Christine, I really can't think of a better anniversary gift for myself than having this conversation with you and having you come on the show. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and just to all of you that are out here listening,
yes.
Thank you for tuning in and for being part of this conversation, and yeah, I just feel so blessed, and the hummingbirds are still flying around, the sun is shining, and these reflectors are like shining lights all over. So I think we made some match today. Job well done, everyone.
Yes,
job well done.
High five to that. And I too say thank you, my dear listeners, for being here. And I want to remind you that until next time, always trust what your heart knows.
Thanks for listening to Trust Your Sacred Feminine Flow with Joni Advent Maher. If you like what you heard, the best compliment you can give us is to share our podcast with a friend and subscribe, rate, and review our podcast at iTunes.